more than capable of introducing yourself. This is kind of a formality that we have, isn't it, in places? But I did want to just say a few things, Jody, about you that has led us to the point where we wanted to invite you to come and share with us in our life as a church community and our journeying. And first of all, just a couple of things in terms of how learning a little bit about your own journey. It's been lovely having you at home for the last couple of days and some of that time and being able to talk about some of these things. And learning, for instance, that part of your journey in the academic space through the experience at Auckland University, but then going on to your master's study was this is something that I didn't know that has just been a delightful little discovery for me, your master's study with Clark Pinnock in that area of the openness of God, and which is a wonderful theological exploration that leads into all sorts of inquiry in pastoral work and ministry with people. What does it mean to know God in this way as the God whose heart is widely open to creation and to all of God's creatures, but particularly to the humans who inhabit this creation of God's. So just lovely to kind of discover that about you in terms of your master's study, that postgrad study that you did in that space, and then your ongoing pastoral training at Carey subsequent to that. And but also to learn a little bit about your family and to learn that there are whakapapa connections into this community. So you will no doubt, sketch a little bit more of that detail, but and are known to people within our church family. And that was just lovely to discover some of those personal connections along the way there. And also to learn a little bit about your family, coming from a family of 8 boys and knowing that you are the mother of 4 boys.
Sounds pathetic.
No, it doesn't. Kia kaha and just honour you as a mum in that space too, as well as in your academic world of discovery. And also with... Gareth, Walter, and Stanley, and Eddie. We have an Eddie in the community, not here today, but just to know that that world of being a parent and being a mum is an immensely rich and challenging world for you too, which has also led you into this exploration of the disability space and disability theology. And the importance of that also in forming an inclusive community for those who are different. Just lovely to pick up some of these threads of your life together. And I'm not going to say any more, but I just want to say, no mai haere mai, welcome to our space and to our people, to our community, to our world. And God bless you as you just open up scripture and open up your heart and share with us what you have for this morning. So maybe we can put our hands together. She's come a long way for Jody. Thanks, Jody.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Thank you so much, Sean, and thank you, Island Baptist, for having me to come and visit with you and speak. You can probably tell by the topic that I've been brought to spend time with you around. I'm not in high demand as a guest speaker around Baptist churches in the country, so this is both an honour and an unusual experience for me to be visiting another church and sharing. I'm going to read you the entire chapter 19 of Genesis. So settle in, hold on to your hats. This chapter comes with trigger warnings, absolutely. It's a scary story. If you don't like listening to scary stories, then do just go outside and take a little bit of space if you need it. The two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. "My lords," he said, "please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night and then go on your way early in the morning." "No," they answered, "we will spend the night in the square." But he insisted so strongly that they did go with him and entered his house. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate. Before they had gone to bed, all the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded the house. They called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out so that we can have sex with them." Lot went outside to meet them and shut the door behind him and said, "No, my friends, don't do this wicked thing. Look, I have two daughters who have never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do what you like with them. But don't do anything to these men, for they have come under the protection of my roof." "Get out of our way," they replied. And they said, "This fellow came here as an alien, and now he wants to play judge." They kept bringing pressure on Lot and moved forward to break down the door. But the men inside reached out and pulled Lot back into the house and shut the door. Then they struck the men who were at the door of the house, young and old, with blindness, so that they could not find the door. The two men said to Lot, "Do you have anyone else here, sons-in-law, sons or daughters, or anyone else in the city who belongs to you? Get them out of here, because we're going to destroy this place. The outcry to the Lord against its people is so great that he sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out and spoke to his son-in-laws, who were pledged to marry his daughters. He said, "Hurry and get out of this place, because the Lord is about to destroy the city." But his sons-in-law thought he was joking. With the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, "Hurry, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away when the city is punished." When he hesitated, the men grasped his hand and the hands of his wife and of his two daughters and led them safely out of the city, for the Lord was merciful to them. As soon as they had brought them out, one of them said, "Flee for your lives. Don't look back. Don't stop anywhere in the plain. Flee to the mountains, or you will be swept away." But Lot said to them, "No, my lords, please, your servant has found favor in your eyes, and you have shown great kindness to me, sparing my life. But I can't flee to the mountains. This disaster will overtake me and I'll die. Look, here is a town near enough to run to, and it's small. Let me flee to it. It's very small, isn't it? Then my life will be spared." He said to him, "Very well, I will grant this request too. I will not overthrow the town you speak of, but flee there quickly because I cannot do anything until you reach it." That is why the town was called Zoar. By the time Lot reached Zoar, the sun had risen over the land. Then the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, including all those living in the cities and also the vegetation in the land. But Lot's wife looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord. He looked down towards Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the plain, and he saw dense smoke rising from the land like smoke from a furnace. So when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham. He brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. Lot and his two daughters left Zoar and settled in the mountains, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar. He and his two daughters lived in a cave. One day the older daughter said to the younger, "Our father is old and there's no man around here to lie with us, as it's the custom all over the earth. Let's get our father to drink wine and then lie with him and preserve our family line through our father." That night they got their father to drink wine, and the older daughter went in and lay with him. He was not aware of it when she lay down or when she got up. The next day the older daughter said to the younger, "Last night I lay with my father. Let's get him to drink wine again, and you can go in and lie with him so we can preserve our family line through our father." So they got their father to drink wine that night also, and the younger daughter went in and lay with him. Again, he was not aware of it when she lay down or when she got up. So both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. The older daughter had a son. She named him Moab. He's the father of the Moabites today. The younger daughter also had a son. She named him Ben-Ammi. He's the father of the Ammonites of today. Genesis chapter 19. I've had some amazing experiences of hospitality. I've been staying with Jill and with Sean. It's been really incredible putting on vegetarian food for me, a wonderful comfy bed to sleep in, a car to use to get around the city. I've been very grateful and very well cared for. But I wanted to tell you about another experience of hospitality last week at Isla's house. Isla and my son Walter were at primary school together for 1 year. Isla's been a lovely and proactive friend to Walter, and Walter is a devoted and enthusiastic friend to Isla. We were invited to Isla's for afternoon tea these holidays. And I should note, we are not always the easiest family to host. We bring a lot of noise and energy, four boys, as has already been established. And Walter is the kind of guest who will joyously throw toys out the window and change the settings on the aircon, all while I'm fishing around for his socks in the indoor planter box. So being hosted by Isla and her family involved freshly baked chocolate chip cookies, which were a real hit, playing in the secret room, which is behind a bookshelf. You push the bookshelf open, it's a door, and then you're in the secret room, which is a lot of fun. Watching TV on their gigantic TV screen, swimming for 2 hours in their swimming pool and spa pool. The kids just went sort of backwards and forwards between the two spaces. Borrowing togs and towels and goggles because we didn't come prepared for a swim. Staying on for dinner because this was actually an afternoon tea date, but there we were eating dinner at their table made to the particular specifications of my children, which is that it's beige and it's tasteless, which was kindly catered to by Isla's mum. And then finally, rather than having us walk home in the dark, it's really not that far, they drove us home in not one but two cars so that Walter could sit next to Isla in the back seat. And I was embarrassed by their generous hospitality, not least because one of my kids made a huge fuss when he was allocated a seat in the Mini Cooper and not the Porsche for the drive home. I tell you this not only to lighten the mood after that really heavy, heartbreaking text from Genesis, but because hospitality is so important to the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and I believe to the subject that you're looking at the moment, relationships, sexuality and gender. Hospitality in this context, of course, is not the industry of food and drink, but an openness and a generosity to those outside of our known and established circles. The story of Sodom and Gomorrah has been used traditionally as one of the clobber texts or texts of terror against LGB and by extension TQIA plus people, against their general existence in the world and against their full participation in the church. The story has the dubious claim of giving the English word sodomy to us in the 11th century. And it is a really strange text to put my hand up for under the banner of relationships, sexuality and gender, because you don't have to be an exegetical genius to notice that it says nothing about sexuality, nothing about sexual desire, nothing about sexual relationships, and very little, I think, about gender beyond the centering of men and the dismissing and damaging of women. I gather it's fallen out of favour in serious conversations on the subject of God's views on the rainbow community, although I did find one impassioned blog post from 2023 citing the story. The Bible itself refers to the story of Sodom quite a few times, 20, I think, beyond Genesis, usually as an example of great wickedness and the requirement for punishment. And I confess I haven't done a deep dive into each of the 20 references in the Bible. That did seem beyond the scope of one sermon. But I have read through the list of wrongs and harms linked to the cities in the prophetic texts like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Amos, and Zephaniah. The issues outlined in those prophetic texts about Sodom and Gomorrah are about a disordered society with no respect for God or for people. David Goshi argues that there's only one verse in Jude with a parallel in 2 Peter where there's an allusion to any kind of sexual sin in Sodom. And that is a reference to going after strange flesh, and he argues is actually about sex with angels, which I think I'll leave as a topic for another day, pick that up in another series. So inhospitality is these days often named as the real issue in Sodom and Gomorrah. Despite the references to the varied wickedness of Sodom in Genesis and elsewhere in the Bible, the threatened violence towards strangers seeking shelter and their immigrant host, Lot, is the only evidence that we're directly given of the state of Sodom, the kind of terrible behaviour illustrated for us. Lack of hospitality is pretty strange shorthand for the incredible violence and viciousness described in that text, I think. But in a time where, because not attacking strangers to your town is a very low bar for hospitality. But in a time where offering hospitality to strangers was a necessary consideration for social order and well-being, the behaviour of the men of Sodom contains another layer of hostility, targeting people who are vulnerable, outside kin protection, and at their mercy. You heard the story. Two men come to Sodom in the evening. Lot catches them on their way into town and invites them and then urges them to stay in his home, an offer which they do eventually accept. And let me say, in fairness to Lot, who doesn't come off well in my reading of the text, he does offer hospitality in an environment where it was clearly quite risky to do so. It's not long before every man of the city, young and old, shows up and demands that Lot turns the visitors out so they can know them. This gentle euphemism, as it's put in some translations of the Bible, is a thin disguise for their intention to attack and humiliate, torture and rape these strangers. Anyone who is challenging the misuse of this passage as a text of terror against people who are same-sex attracted or in same-sex relationships will point out that the chances of an entire town's worth of men being gay, as we understand it, is infinitesimal. This is about power and abuse, not attraction. Lot slips outside and tries to sway the mob, offering his own young daughters instead. Some commentators suggest Lot was trying to shock the city's men into seeing how awful their intentions were. Some suggest that this is just how complete his commitment to hospitality is, that he will do anything to protect these men under his roof. And others, like me, think him a very poor excuse for a father. It's certainly a red flag. Whatever his motive, the offer changes nothing other than makes the mob ready to turn on Lot. And at this point, the guests in peril, who are in fact powerful agents of God, turn the tables by rescuing Lot and pulling him inside and blinding the would-be attackers so they can't find the door. And the visitors tell Lot to gather up his family and to get out of the city because they've been sent by the Lord to destroy it. But in the morning, when it's time to take his family and leave, Lot lingers. He has to be led away by the angels who take him along with his wife and his daughters. He's offered his daughters to the mob the night before, and he doesn't even prioritize getting them out of the doomed city this morning. Not only that, Lot haggles with the angels in the midst of the supposed frantic fleeing. His haggling is not for the men engaged to marry his daughters, not for his neighbours of 20 years, not for his wife who can't help but look back, not for the possibility there are some good people somewhere in the city. Lot's haggling is for his own comfort and where exactly it would suit him to flee to. And Lot gets what he wants. Later, as you heard, he's attacked by the daughters he was willing to send out to be attacked. His self-interest is so shallow, it doesn't even extend to bringing health to his own relationships. It's It's pretty clear from the text, I think, that this story is not addressing the question of consensual, respectful sexual relationships or even desire between persons of any gender. As you're probably finding in this series, and I can't remember how far through you are, same-sex relationships are not a preoccupation for the Bible. But while Sodom lacks hospitality, the story doesn't set Lot up as the true counter-example to Sodom's lack of hospitality. To find the exemplar of hospitality in Genesis, we have to go back a chapter to chapter 18, where God has first visited Abraham in the guise of three messengers. And the visitors come to Abraham, who welcomes them with lavish hospitality. In fact, it's very similar to that shown by Lot to the visitors who come to his town in the next chapter. But when compared, there are some hints that Lot's hospitality is not quite as bountiful as Abraham's. And the angels deliver the news that there will be a baby born to Abraham and Sarah, which of course is its own story. And before they depart to go on to Sodom and to be two visitors met by Lot, God wonders about hiding from Abraham what God is about to do to Sodom, and concludes that Abraham, who's destined to be the start of a great and mighty nation and to become a blessing to others, should know what is going on behind the scenes. How great is the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah, and how very grave their sin, God declares. I must go down and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me. And if not, I will know. At this point, Abraham enters into a fascinating theological discussion with God. He pushes back on God, and he pushes God to consider the implications of smiting a whole city. Abraham continues on with his expansive hospitality, which he's already demonstrated in the way he greeted and hosted three strangers. Abraham challenges God. Abraham nudges God to greater justice. And when Lot haggles for his own comfort and convenience, Abraham haggles for the sake of others. Abraham asks if there are 50, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10 righteous people in those wicked cities, would God really sweep them away? Shall not the judge of the earth do what is just? Should not a righteous God consider the possibilities of what even a tiny community of good people could achieve, rather than get caught up in retribution that annihilates the good with the bad? Abraham doesn't go lower than 10 in his haggling. It's as if he and God agree that there is a critical mass required to redeem a city. And then the story shifts on to the next chapter and to Sodom and Lot and the visitors and ultimately to destruction. But a new idea is planted, an expansive generosity and hospitality that outstrips retribution and giving up, audacious hospitality that seeks life and not death. Abraham is no saint, as Hagar and Ishmael and Isaac could all bear witness. But in the setup of these stories in Genesis, this little cycle that we're looking at, it's Abraham whose behavior stands over and against the behavior of Sodom and even the behavior of Lot. And of course, for us, it's Jesus Christ who stands over and against all of them, the one whose very being is hospitality for humanity, the one who feeds friends and strangers, the one who welcomes children, the one who heals the sick, the one who draws in the outcasts, the one who keeps company on lonely roads, the one who breaks the bread of recognition, the one who calls us to the feast of heaven and calls us to live that feast wherever we find ourselves here and now. Abraham may be the gold standard in the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, but Jesus is the full revelation of Abraham's inkling that God is so much more than a tit-for-tat punisher of wrongdoing. God is vast, God is creative, and God can make room. Jesus embodies the hospitality of God, and while that starts with meals and practical welcome, it's ultimately an orientation in itself. And it's an orientation of love and care and reciprocity. Yes, there's challenge and truth-telling too. I don't want to sweep that aside. But Jesus not only brings hospitality to the fore, he proves that it's not dependent on even being an official host with a name badge saying, "Hi, I'm your host today." He's usually a guest, and still his hospitality holds true. And so we are all guests of the risen Christ, who invites us to Christ's table, who invites us to Christ's work, who invites us to be Christ's body, and to participate in Christ's life. So when we look at today's text, first we need to de-terrorize it from the harm it's been used to do. But we can and should also consider what it offers us in the way of challenge and invitation. So instead of seeing Sodom as a depraved homosexual community deserving obliteration, we might see it as a reminder to the church about the importance of hospitality, and not the lowest bar hospitality where you don't violently attack the vulnerable, but the bigger, broader hospitality practice, care about and advocacy for the other, those who have been outside of your known circles. In this reading of Sodom, it isn't the rainbow community who are the evil city. Instead, the rainbow community are the mysterious, significant, God-sent guests. Sodom, as a city, normalized harmful attitudes and behavior, and we know that the church has too. And so here's our invitation to examine what hospitality means for the church and for followers of Jesus. Hospitality, as I say, is so much more than refraining from violence towards those who need shelter. It's so much more than signs on doors proclaiming, "Welcome on my terms and my terms only." It is so much more than appeasing mobs with new victims. It is so much more than misguided notions of host power, imagining ourselves to be the magnanimous hosts who allow good and appreciative guests into our places and spaces. Hospitality is about how we care for the all of each other, orientate ourselves towards each other and the gifts we have to give. We might already have angels in our midst. Please don't think that I'm claiming that rainbow Christians must be angelic. I'm just inviting us to flip that tired old script. I can't read Sodom and Gomorrah as an indictment of homosexuality, but with so much dysfunction and destructive behavior in the city and no faithful group, however tiny, to seek the heart of God, I do reflect how desperately people need safe and steady communities to explore what healthy relationships and sexuality and gender identity mean for humans made in the image of God. And if the church isn't willing to offer that, then I don't know where we think people are supposed to go. I don't just mean as well that we need rainbow people in our churches so that rainbow people have a place to ask human questions about being human in the light of God. We need our rainbow kin to be fully part of Christian community, because how can we possibly understand our humanity without their stories and lives as a full and present part of us? So we're not talking about people outside of the love of God who need straight cis Christians like myself to usher them in. We're talking about people who are already loved and known by God, who are desperately needed to help shape the church's expression of hospitality in and for God's world. When I think of being hosted by Isla and her family last week, it's not about the pool and the food and the Porsche, though all of that was jolly nice. It's that there are four people in our neighbourhood who know my Walter, who care about him, and will look out for him when he needs it. Hospitality makes the world a more expansive and generous place and reflects the heart of God for the world. May the church learn and grow in our hospitality, I pray. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jody. Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for bravely taking a text, which is, you know, such a difficult text.
I've never preached on that.
Yeah. Such a horrible text. It was the one I didn't want, so I said, would you like that one with you? So thank you. And thank you for opening it up for us in such a beautiful way and bringing both a wiru, a challenge in terms of what sits within that invitation to extend the borders of our hospitality so that they actually are aligned with the hospitality that is offered to us in God and in Christ. I love the way you've painted that picture for us. We're just going to create some space now for people to come to Barstool, either with perhaps you may have a question for Jody, but you may just also have something else that you want to add to Barstool, just remembering to be honest and brief. And just create the space now for some hospitality. Come and bring questions. If you're not comfortable with you visiting today or you're not comfortable with coming forward to our bar stool and you want to bring a question or a comment from where you are, feel free to do that too. But bar stool is open, so let's just embrace this. Now you've got... Yeah, do you want to... I'll come and set up.
Hello, I'm Catherine. Most of you know me. We're on a bit of a journey in our family with embracing quite a lot of difference. And as you know, our daughter Amelie has come through this very difficult journey living through an eating disorder and